Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, this is Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is TS Radio Network. Our show tonight is Dialysis Advocates. It's hosted by Arlene Mullen and is presented in coordination with Marcel Reed and the Whistleblower Summit, taking place in Washington, D.C. every July. I hope you can attend. Arlene will be there. I'll be there. A lot of people that you hear on these shows will be in attendance, so please give that some thought if you would. Arlene, I'm going to turn it over to you now, everybody. Here's your host, Arlene Mullen.
Oh, thank you, Marty, and thank you, Marcel, for this opportunity for our patients. I have Dr. Frank McCormick. Thank you for coming on tonight. I guess it's 5 o'clock where you're at. It's 8 o'clock here.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, well, would you give us a little background about your background, and then I'm going to really get down to the questions that people would love to hear.
Okay, I am a PhD economist, and I spent most of my time in at the Federal Reserve Board in Washington and at the Bank of America in San Francisco. And after retiring from the Bank of America, I got interested in the problem of a shortage of transplant kidneys for people who have kidney failure. And the shortage is very large, and an awful lot of people die each year, in my view, unnecessarily because of the kidney shortage.
Okay. Maybe if you could explain to our audience, you know, what are kidneys and what do they do?
Okay. Kidneys are fifth-size organs. We have two of them at the lower back. And what they do is they filter the blood, removing impurities. And if they're not working well, then you are going to die within a few weeks' time.
Okay.
That's
and
scary.
You can live with one, correct?
Yes, you can live a normal life with one, and over 100,000 Americans have donated one of their kidneys, and they're doing quite well.
Okay, and what is kidney failure? Oh, go on,
kidney
Marty, I'm sorry.
Kidney failure is when your kidneys do not do what they're supposed to do, when they're not purifying the blood, filtering it properly, removing the impurities. And so the impurities build up, and your body can't take that for very long. So one of two things has to occur. You have to get a transplant kidney, which is the ideal solution, or you can go on dialysis, which is keeps you alive, but it does only about 15% of what your kidneys normally do. So what happens is the impurities in your blood build up slowly, and about one-fourth of the people on dialysis die in the first year, and about half die in about 4 years.
Dr. McCormick, can I ask, when you talk about impurities in the kidneys, what would these consist of generally? I mean, is there something specific that does this to the kidneys that backs up and clogs them up, collects in there? Is there
I don't know. I should emphasize that when you say Dr. McCormick, that I'm not a physician. I am an economist, and I'm afraid a physician would be necessary to give you all of the technical details of what the kidneys do.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Then what is dialysis? You can explain that to us, to the audience.
Well, the most common form, you go to a center, and they hook you up to a machine. And it takes the blood out of your body, purifies it as a kidney does, and then it puts it back into your body. And you have to do this about 3 days a week for about 4 hours a day. And it leaves most people being very tired. So it's not a very pleasant way to live. It keeps you alive, but it keeps you alive in hopes of getting a kidney transplant from someone.
Okay, and a transplant, so they can understand. A lot of the audience is, you know, doesn't have a clue. And
sure, sure.
So what, if you could explain that too for them.
Well, it's a miracle of modern medicine where you can take a kidney from one person and give it to another person. And the problem with that is your body is set up to reject foreign substances, even something like a kidney that might save your life. And so what the clever docs have done is come up with immunosuppressant drugs, which means they keep your body from rejecting the kidney. So after you receive a kidney transplant, for the rest of your life, you have to take drugs that keep your body from rejecting the kidney.
Okay, and I was going to ask you, I'm a former worker in dialysis, is that the government pays for the donor, of the kidney, pays the medical expenses of the donating. The transplant drugs, they only pay for 3 years, and I've never understood why, because it's cheaper than dialysis, and which has caused some cherry picking.
Well, I have to agree with you. I don't understand it either. It's a quirk in the law which should be changed, and I don't know anyone who is against changing it, but nonetheless, it hasn't been changed.
Yeah, because that to me makes no sense, because if you can't afford it after 3 years, and most people live a lot of years on dialysis, that there's just no hope of getting out from under this forever unless you are lucky enough to have a job and a good insurance plan. Where do the majority of the kidneys come from?
If you talk about sex, most of them come from women. Roughly two-thirds come from women. One-third come from men. You can speculate on what the reason for that is. My own judgment is that women are nicer than men, so they are more
stronger.
Generous.
And, stronger.
And they usually come from relatives or close friends. Almost all of them come from someone who knows someone. Only about 3% come from folks who are just really kind souls and are willing to give their kidney to anybody. But the other 97%, there's some relationship between the person who receives the kidney and the person who's giving the kidney.
Wow. How long does it take usually? I know that the clinics are supposed to give the patients, put them on, you know, in connection with the transplant. But it seems like for now it's 5 years before they qualify. Is that true or false, or have you heard that?
Yes, that's roughly right. It varies greatly depending on, one, the type of kidney you need. It turns out that when you transplant a kidney, you have to match the donor and the recipient, like they have to have the same blood type. And there are a bunch of other things also that have to match. And some people, it's very hard to find a match for them. that will work, and they won't reject the kidney. So that's the way it is.
Have you heard, I've heard rumors, I don't know if it's true or not, so I don't have anything on it, but that patients, that they're working on getting to do the organs to where they are cleansed and they're transplanted on all the anti-rejection, you know, the is taken out of the kidney. It's like a clean kidney that starts in that patient right then. I've heard of that.
Well, I'm afraid I don't know anything about that. The physician
would
answer that question.
Well, yeah, that would be nice. My next question is it risky for the living donor?
Slightly.
To donate.
It turns out that most of the people who donate, they have to pass a very rigorous exam to do that. And I think only somewhere between 25 and 50% are able to pass the exam. It's a physical exam and a psychological exam. They're trying to understand exactly why the person is donating and if they're being subject to pressure by their family or there are other forces, then they will be rejected for that. And they have to be in very, very good health in order to donate. So the people who are in very good health usually are less likely to need their second kidney sometime in their life. So if you look at the statistics, the average person, their chances of getting kidney failure in their life is about 3%. But if you are healthy enough to donate a kidney, it's less than 1%. And the people who donate a kidney, donate a kidney, they have a very less than a 1% chance of needing that kidney sometime in their life.
Well, I've also heard, I don't know if you know this, that if you've lost a transplant, you go ahead of, you're back on the top of the transplant list.
That's absolutely right, which is only fair. So, yes.
So, in other words, if it happens to them, then they go to the top of the list for their donation. Are there enough kidneys available right now?
Absolutely not. There's a tremendous shortage. Roughly 126,000 people a year are diagnosed with kidney failure, and only about 20,000 of them will receive a transplant. So there's a huge number of people who could benefit from a transplant that don't receive it, and consequently they are essentially sentenced to a short life on dialysis where their health steadily deteriorates, and then they die prematurely. So it's a very sad situation. Indeed, it's a catastrophic situation. We estimate that about 43,000 Americans a year die unnecessarily because of the shortage of kidneys.
And why is there such a shortage?
Well, it's a very simple economic question. If you take an economics course, one of the first things they do is show you that when the government imposes a price ceiling that is below the market price, it causes a shortage. The quantity demanded exceeds the quantity supplied, and that happens in all markets all the time. But there's very few in the United States price ceilings that interfere. But what happened was in 1984, they passed a law called the National Organ Transplant Act, and it forbade the payment of any compensation to a donor of a kidney. So they were essentially imposing a price ceiling of zero on the market, and you wound up with a huge shortage of kidneys because of that.
Jeez. What can be done to increase this?
Well, we can change the law to allow kidney donors to be compensated. It turns out that everybody else involved in recovering a kidney is paid the market rate for their services. The doctors, the nurses, the hospital people, the folks who transplant a kidney, everyone is paid the market rate except for the donor. And the donor is prohibited from being paid, and that has mm-hmm. caused a big shortage.
Jeez, why, guess it happened. Well, what about, I know that reading some of the material about pain for kidneys, I know I have a person I know very well that went to Iran, and they actually do not have a kidney problem due to the fact that they're allowed to sell their kidneys.
That's right. Iran is the only country in the world that allows the donor to be compensated. And they're the only country that does not have a waiting list for kidneys.
Right, but they find that it puts a lot of people out of poverty, and it usually hits the poor people, correct, in this nation? If we did that, I think.
You mean the people who need a kidney?
Yeah, if we don't allow them to be paid for, the donor. In other words, the recipient can't buy a kidney. So what do you think about people selling their kidneys here in the United States?
The big thing in the United States, the market would be run by the government, and the government
right.
would compensate the kidney donor, and they would then allocate the kidney to the people who most need it. And if the government did this, pretty soon they would have enough kidneys that they would be able to take care of all the people who have a kidney problem. And it is sometimes argued that this would exploit poor people because they would be more likely to donate a kidney in response to an offer of compensation. However, it is also true that poor people suffer disproportionately from kidney failure, and they would be greatly helped by being able to get a kidney. We ground the numbers, and we found out that the poor people would be essentially 10 times better off under a system in which the government compensated donors than they are under the current system. So the proposal that we have would not exploit poor people. It would help them tremendously.
Right, just like in Iran, it's brought up. It's gotten quite a few people out of poverty over there. I think that is, to me, it's like it's our body, which is not owned by anyone but us at this point, that there should be a choice, and it should be the donor, between the donor and the recipient. But I do know that if a surgeon knows that a purchase has been made, they legally cannot perform the surgery as it stands now with the law.
In the United States, you're referring to that?
Yeah.
No, it can't be performed legally in the United States if they know that the person has been paid. Now, what happens is, since there are such strong economic forces at work in order to encourage people to donate a kidney, that people are paid under the table. Side payments are made that are illegal. And as a matter of fact, when you go to donate a kidney, when you're interviewed, they try to find out if you are being paid. And so they try to eliminate that. But it's very, very difficult to determine if someone is being paid under the table. So it probably occurs quite often. We have no idea how often, but we know it occurs.
Yeah, it does happen. I know it happens. I mean, it's a no-brainer. As long as you don't admit it, it didn't happen. But is there... I think with the transplant... Also, as an advocate, I find that a lot of patients, if they're terminated from care and they're blacklisted from clinics, that if you don't have a doctor, you're automatically off the transplant list. Have you heard of that?
I think that's quite likely. To get on the list, you have to be recommended by a doctor. So one of the requirements. And then of the people who are recommended, they are recommended to a transplant center. And then the center further whittles down the number of people. When you get through the whole process, it discriminates greatly against poor people. Richer people and people in better health have a better chance of getting through the whole system and getting a transplant.
What about a lot of patients are going overseas? Does the government, do you know, do they pay for the transplant drugs if they come from overseas, or it's if they have it done there?
Government certainly doesn't pay them to have it done there. However,
no,
when they return to the United States, then the doctors give them the same care they would give anyone. So.
Okay, so they would have the transplant drugs. I never knew that. Is there anything else that, if you could go more into what zerowaitlist.org, Josh Morrison, I have nothing but a lot of respect for. I've met him up in New York several times. And so what is it exactly about the group that you could tell us about, Waitlist Zero?
Oh, okay. Well, Josh is the head of that, and he's a wonderful person. Indeed, he is one of the rare folks who have altruistically given a kidney. In other words, he has donated it to whoever most needs it. He hasn't, it's not a relative or a friend or anything like that. And as I mentioned, only about 3% of the living donors do that. The other 97% specify a relative or friend. So Josh is a wonderful fellow, and he is working very hard to try to change the law that we are that's causing all the problems, or more precisely, to have the Health and Human Services administratively change the compensation for donors. What happens right now is that the government could compensate donors if they so choose, and they have a program set up already to help poor people. It's called the National Living Donor Acceptance Center, and it takes poor people, poor donors, and it gives them money for travel and lodging expenses. And Josh is trying to get that organization to expand its mandate so that it will be able to compensate donors for more than just travel and lodging, but also for, say, the wages that they lose, because it takes about a month or so to recover from after you have donated a kidney. It's a major operation, and it takes your body a while to come back, especially for people who have a job that requires a physical effort. They can be off for a while. And so the idea here would be have the government compensate those people to make it more feasible for them to donate a kidney.
Well, the thing is the donors, as far as memories first to go, but I think that's the organization. I think I was on the board. I just didn't have enough time for that organization. Adolf Revere Fry. And it's good that everyone's working together, but what are the odds? I mean, it's number 3 in our federal budget just for dialysis. So the government would be making money to have other options. And I find that a lot of patients come to us and they say they're on the transplant list. And I ask them to call and double check, and they're not even on the transplant list. Plus, I think a lot of times doctors and facility administrators can call the transplant and say a patient is non-compliant, and that automatically takes them off the transplant list. And
well,
I think
the system has lots and lots of problems is what it comes down to.
Right.
And they all stem from the fact that kidneys are so scarce. And so they have to be allocated by some methods, and the allocation tends to be very harmful to poor people compared to rich people. It turns out that you can register for a transplant to get on the list at your local transplant center, but you can also get on the list at other transplant centers. And most patients aren't aware of that. And that will increase your chances of getting a kidney. However, you have to have the ability to be able to get to these other transplant centers very quickly, because there's a very short time period where the kidney, once it's taken out of another body, can continue to function well when you put it in a new body. So that's a very limited time. So you have to be registered at transplant centers that you can get to. Now, the richer you are, the more transplant centers you can get to. If you have a jet plane standing by, as Steve Jobs did, then you can register at a lot of centers. I don't know how many he was registered at, but he did not receive, I guess it was a liver or a pancreas, I can't remember, from his local center. He's got it from one that was far away. So the wealthy have a distinct advantage over the average, or especially the poor people, in getting one of these kidneys under the current system.
Oh, yeah, it's a very unfair system. I see it I see it quite often with patient complaints where we had a couple that were ready to go for their kidney, and the doctor makes a phone call and says the patient is non-compliant, and nothing has to be proven because of the time it takes to transplant that kidney. You don't have a whole lot of time. So I think that there's a lot that needs to be done, but I do believe in my heart, listening, and a lot of these centers are brutal. There are good centers. And it has the highest mortality rate of any medical disease. And it's to the point where, are our patients better off with transplants? The government would be saving a lot of money, taxpayer money, but also, more important, the patients have a life free from the machine. But the industry doesn't make money if the patients are transplanted. So I imagine there will be a big pushback.
Well, to our knowledge, the pushback is not coming from the dialysis providers. It's coming from members of the medical community, especially the transplant surgeons, who have ethical questions about transplantation. They don't make a lot of sense to me. It's more a visceral reaction that it's wrong to pay people for their organs. That is somehow so fundamentally wrong that they're willing to see 43,000 people a year suffer and die from a kidney failure.
Yeah, well, I think that there's, I think everything needs to stop. But to me, it's just like a woman has control over her body, and that was a hard fight. And these patients deserve another opportunity. Plus, the poor, and like you say, I've seen a lot of patients who are not called on the transplant for one reason or another, but I always find that the ones that can afford, like you said, they get the kidneys. Either they go overseas or, you know, and get their transplant. So there is a disparity, and we're number three as far as on the federal budget, just dialysis. So why not give these patients back alive, and why not let the judgment be theirs? But that's my own opinion.
No, I completely agree. It's a win-win-win.
Yeah.
Transplant a kidney is way better off. We estimate that's worth about $1 million to them, just roughly speaking. And the person who donates the kidney, we would estimate that the going rate would be something like around $50,000 in that neighborhood. And so they would be better off. And then, as you mentioned, the government, the taxpayer, would be better off, because it turns out that dialysis is very expensive compared to a transplant. So if you have a transplant, you can pay for it in essentially 2 or 3 years by stopping dialysis. So this would save the government a lot of money. It would help the recipient of the transplant enormously. And the donor would be getting something like $50,000 for the kidney, whereas now, if they donate it, they get nothing.
Yeah, yeah. And it's I couldn't even give mine away, you know. But so what brought you into this? What brought you to dialysis and Weight Zero organization?
Well, I'm not actually a member of Weight Zero. That's Josh's bailiwick.
Mm-hmm.
But I was,
right.
After I retired from the Bank of America, I was teaching at the business schools at Berkeley and at University of California at Davis. And one of the courses is just microeconomics. And it's a very simple exercise in microeconomics to show with supply and demand curves that when the government holds the price below the market clearing price, it creates a shortage. And as an example, usually economists cite rent controls in New York City or price controls on gasoline during the 1970s. But I became aware of the kidney shortage, and so I started using that as an example of a shortage created by the government imposition of a price ceiling. And the students were fascinated with that, because here was a price control, but not only just mm-hmm. caused inconvenience, like with rent control or with gasoline shortages, but this was a price control that was killing people. And not just a few people, but a whole lot of people. And that is how I got interested in doing research on the problem.
And you write articles also, correct?
Yes. We've written several articles on this. And most recently, we had an editorial in the Journal of the American Society of Nephrology. And that we pointed out how many people have died. And and it's been an enormous number. I mean, it's roughly 43,000 a year, and that's conservative right now. And that's been going on for a long time. We have records going back to about 1988. And over that period, we estimate almost 1 million people have died prematurely from kidney failure. And they would have lived much longer and had a better life if they were able to get a transplant. So the devastation caused by the government holding the price down, that is not allowing donors to be compensated, is just incredibly large. The 43,000 people a year that are currently dying because of it, that's equivalent to about 85 fully loaded 747s crashing each year. Now, if that was occurring, people would be up in arms demanding that something be done about it. But in fact, very few people are concerned about all of the people who are dying because of kidney failure. So what we're trying to do is sort of wake everyone up to the enormity of the problem and try to get them to take care of the problem by allowing the government to compensate the kidney donors.
Well, that only makes sense, but, you know, anyhow, Marty, do you have anything to say, ask?
Well, it just seems odd to me that when you talk about and looking at it strictly from the economic standpoint, if they were truly concerned about saving money, we hear this screaming about the budget all the time and the deficit spending and everything. This to me seems like a measure that if they would allow the donor to be paid, would save, as I think you said, in the long run, it would save the government money. It would save taxpayers money, because remember, they're not spending anybody's money but yours. It's not like they're spending their own. And
That's right.
Yeah, so it's why they wouldn't do this. I'm the logic here is escaping me. I'm listening to you talk, and I don't understand the logic behind this. It doesn't, just does not make sense to me.
Well, I'm with you. I don't get the logic
either.
When the politicians are thinking about this, they usually consult the official organizations, like the Transplant Surgeons Organization and people like that. And so far, those organizations have not signed on to compensating donors. There are enough people in those organizations who feel very strongly opposed to the very idea of paying someone for their organs that they will not, they nix the whole thing, essentially. So it is, I wouldn't say it was a small group, but it's a sizable group of people who have what I would call misplaced ethical concerns. They're more concerned about someone getting paid for their organ than they are about all of the 43,000 people a year who are dying because of the current rules.
Well, you know,
well, the thing
Mr. McCormick, I'm sorry, go ahead. Well, I was going to say, like our driver's license here, you know, you can be an organ donor. And I talk to a lot of people who say, you know, I'm scared to put that on there. Because the way things go, you know, I might bump my head and wake up dead, and having had my organs taken. And on other shows that I've done, Mr. McCormick, we talk about clinical death. One lady who runs the National Association for Medical Malpractice, her daughter was challenged from birth, and they said she wouldn't live to be past 5 or 6. She lived to 22. She choked on a piece of a hot dog at a county fair, and they got her to the hospital. The doctors did terrible things. They punctured her esophagus, her intestine. I mean, they did all kinds of things. She was clinically dead, and the next morning they performed a surgery on her, knowing she actually was dead. And she was always terrified that what they were doing was keeping the body alive, even though the brain death had occurred, so that they could take organs. And I hear people expressing this fear all the time. And then, of course, you see the scare stuff on TV of, you know, people being found in Central Park and they've had a kidney removed and they didn't, you know, they were kidnapped. So you have all these scare tactics in place. And I think all of this is encouraged by not allowing a donor to be paid. You know, they'll even pay you for your blood. Why wouldn't they allow you to be paid for a kidney, for God's sake?
I don't know. My understanding is that you can be paid for blood plasma, which is, I guess, a concentrated form of blood. But actually, people aren't paid for blood, except for very minor. They give you a cookie or, you know, whatever. But it turns out that there is not a big shortage of blood usually at certain times. There is. But that's a market that even though you pay people enough, generous people are willing to give blood, that there is not the critical shortage that there is in kidneys.
Right, right. Okay. I'm sorry, Mr. McCormick. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, it just turns out with kidneys, it's a much bigger deal than donating blood. And if you prevent people from being compensated, then there's a tremendous shortage, and it has devastating consequences.
Well, I think I don't know. They're exploiting patients just being on these machines. So, I mean, just what see, and it's the poor, and, you know, a lot of minorities. So I think this is the solution and an answer. And I will do whatever I can with my network to help out.
You've got a caller on here from area code 970. You're live and on the air.
Hey, this is Chris. Just wanted to mention that I gave my daughter a kidney back in October 2000, and I know a lot of people are afraid of some sort of after effects that something's going to happen, but it's been over 18 years now, and I've been fine, and my daughter's doing great. She's actually a pharmacist now, working for the hospital where she had the transplant. So yeah, she's been doing great, and I just remember back when we did the transplant, she didn't seem to be taking well to dialysis, sort of looked like a zombie. Afterwards, she perked up, and it was like she came back to life. And it was one of the, best moments of my life to see that. So just
bless your heart.
Wanted to mention it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, well,
all right.
That illustrates very well the value of a transplant. Life on dialysis is not pleasant, and the people don't like it. And if you give your daughter a kidney, that's fantastic. And you see the change in her life, and that occurs in other people too.
Okay, we've got another caller on, and I believe this is Ariel.
Hello, hi.
Hi.
Hi, Ariel. This young patient is looking for a transplant, and she's on a GoFundMe right now page because they're making her get an apartment, move away from her family in order to qualify. I've never heard of something like that, but I'll let you tell her tell you her story.
I've been on dialysis since I was 9 years old. Like you were saying about poor people and stuff like that. My mom and my dad wasn't together, so I've lived with just my mom, basically. Like a lot of what you were saying, what I seen as a kid was a lot of people with support, social workers coming to you in your face, doctors coming to you, making sure that you're okay and everything like that. I actually got a transplant too when I was younger. but as I got older, a lot of that support had disappeared, and a lot of help. Basically, like you said, they just leave you on the machine and stuff. What I got taken back the most is how is it that they won't give you a kidney transplant when, like you said, that you could pay back for it in those 3 years? You know, I see there's a lot of old people on the machine as well, but there are also a lot of young people. And if they just gave us that chance with the kidney, we would pay back in so many other ways. We would have a career, because we're no longer tied to this machine anymore. I think there's a lot of things in the adult field that is completely, completely different. And everything that you guys said, that's absolutely 100% true, that what we have to deal with. and it's just sad.
Wow. What I find interesting about you. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that, as we said before, poor people are at a very great disadvantage. If I heard it correctly, they required you to have an apartment near the medical center for a while, and that's an expense that, you know, some people can't handle. And there's lots of other ones. As I mentioned, you could register at more than one medical center, but you have to be able to get to them in a very short period of time. And just to qualify to get on the list of different medical centers, you have to travel to them and go through the hoops that they make you jump through. And the more affluent people are better able to jump through those hoops. So,
Ariel, could I ask you, you know, it just seems odd to me, and Arlene, you know, touched on it too, the idea that they are putting this provision on you that you have to move into your own place. It would seem to me with a transplant, you need to be with family or people who can help care for you while you recover first and foremost, and then help you get on your feet afterwards. This, the idea, I did some calling around after we had you on the show last week, and nobody's ever heard of this before, of you being forced to get your... But the other thing that bothers me is that they not only want you to move, but it's into another state.
Is it a clinic? Oh, the
hospital,
the transplant.
I think
okay.
Because I had a lot of like family dysfunction in my family growing up. You know, I had to not only deal with my disability, but I was in foster care and everything. I got taken away from my mother. They know that. So they don't think that it's good for me to stay there, but nobody's helping me. So I can't, like, I'm on Social Security, you know? So how am I just supposed to say, yeah, I've been complying, I went to all my appointments, I actually got cleared, you know, from all the appointments that I had to do in order to get activated on the list. And that was the last thing they told me, I need an apartment. How can you expect me to do these things when I don't have these tools?
Right.
Yes.
Right.
And
that's
weird to me too.
Well, people who are not well off are at a serious disadvantage. It turns out if you are out in the boonies, far away from a medical center, you're also at a great disadvantage because you have to go to these transplant centers in order to essentially pass their examination to get on their list. And then you have to be able to get to that transplant center within, you know, an hour or two or three or four as fast as possible if a kidney becomes available, because the kidneys don't last long is what it comes down to. And they have to be put in the recipient very soon after they're removed from the and so they come from a deceased donor, from the deceased donor.
So can I ask
you
a question? If you was to work hard and do all these things and comply, which, you know, is there a little hope for people that are in this situation, that are going through this, that are young and never even got to have a career, never even got to start their life? Is there no hope for us?
I'm afraid it's a very bad situation for lots and lots of people is what it comes down to. And the solution is to change things in Washington to have the Health and Human Services Administration provide more funds to make it easier for people to donate or to get rid of the NOTA law, which imposes this ceiling, which prevents donors from being paid. So something in Washington has to change to help poor folks who are suffering from kidney failure And it's just a crying shame that the current situation exists for all the people who have kidney failure.
Right.
Hey, this is just, to me, it's unthinkable. I'm listening to all of this. I'm trying to get my mind around it. My view of the medical field overall has diminished tremendously over the last 10 years. Things I've seen happen, things that are going on, things that doctors are willing to do or not to do. And it's just, this isn't right. It's like you're being held hostage, you know, mm-hmm. to a system that basically is set against you. And it would take this one small change, which is a cost-saving measure in the long run, but in the short run would save someone's life. And we need to do something about this. We need to.
Well, Josh Morrison with Weightless Zero is the one who's taking the lead on this in Washington to try to bring about a change.
And okay. He is a wonderful man, just wonderful young man.
Okay, what actually is he doing? Is there anything we could get on board with, help promote? What could we do to help out, Mr. McCormick?
Well, I imagine you could join Weightless Zero for starters and support him in his efforts. He is trying to find people on both sides of the aisle. This is not a partisan issue, incidentally. There's no
right.
reason for Democrats or Republicans to be against it for ideological reasons, quite the contrary. Interestingly, the fellow who is most active in Congress on this is Congressman Matt Cartwright, who's from Scranton, Pennsylvania, and who is a liberal Democrat, and he is taking the lead. And however, he's being supported by conservative organizations and indeed has bipartisan support for his efforts in Congress. It turns out that the current Secretary of HHS, Health and Human Services, Alex Azar, I think is his name, has a father who had kidney failure and received a transplant. That is the information that I am aware of. So here we have a very important member of a Republican administration who may be very sympathetic to a liberal Democratic congressman's proposals. So we'll just have to see what comes out of that. There are enormous number of people right now. There are about 500,000 people on dialysis in this country. And most people know someone who has been on dialysis or is on it. And that is a tremendous number of people who would be a interest group that would support Josh Morrison's efforts to change the law in Washington.
Well, something needs to be done. This is, like I say, the logic in this escapes me. As far as ideological differences on this, I know I have seen things from the these evangelicals. Lord, what a bunch. About how this is wrong and you shouldn't do this. It's tampering with God's creation. Well, I don't think God intended for anybody to have kidney failure or to be on dialysis for the rest of their life, however long that might be. I think things are provided for us. You know, we're given a gift, and some people just refuse to recognize it. And as you pointed out, Mr. McCormick, everybody else in this gets paid. They get paid mightily for what goes on. Why the donor, someone who voluntarily will donate, couldn't also get paid? I just don't understand it. And then we talk about how backward Iran is and, oh, how terrible things over the idea that they don't have this problem over there because they do compensate people for donating when someone needs it. We need to stop and think that one over. That just doesn't doesn't work for me. But you know what I'm saying? It just apparently they're a little more advanced than we'd like to give them credit for. But in the end here, what's happening, like with Ariel, and by the way, we have her GoFundMe page up. If you can help out, please do. $5, $10, $20 at help, anything you can do. You can find that at GoFundMe, and it's Ariel Barcelo. Is that correct?
Yes, Barcelo, B-A-R-C-E-L-O.
Yes, at GoFundMe. And like I say, if you can give $5, $10, $20, you can afford that. You know you can. And you can donate anonymously, or you can put your name up there, however you want to do it. But anything would help out. Arlene, you want got any final statements here?
No, I just want to thank Dr. McCormick for being on. This was very informative. I have not had a chance really to go into the transplants. I've been so busy with dialysis. So I want to thank you and hope that people will contact your organization, waitzero.org, isn't it?
I assume that's right.
Yeah. Waitzero.
Waitlist.org. Yes.
Yeah.
I have a live link to it in the show promo. Yeah. Yeah. So
okay.
It's waitlistzero.org, just like it sounds.
And I would suggest, I know Josh personally, and he is, like Dr. McCormick said, has donated to a total stranger. Wonderful, wonderful. And he really is taking this serious and has been working really hard to get this out and really has made a lot of headway. But I would suggest people would help out that organization with letters or whatever also, because we really need to do something to alleviate and give people back their lives.
Yes. And adding,
Marty,
adding
always,
your name also. What I was going to say, adding your name to any of these groups that are out there, whatever the topic is, there is power in numbers. And the more of you there are on Waitlist Zero, power you wield. So if you can sign up for that site, I would suggest doing it. And, of course, Arlene's show here is put on by dialysisadvocates.com, and it's committed advocacy. Good Lord, there's a ton of information there. So, like I say, if nothing else, you can add your name. Add your name. There's power in numbers. And these people are in desperate need of help. I still, Arlene, am trying to get past the idea that someone can put a complaint in these people's file and get them ejected from these clinics, putting their life in jeopardy.
I'm from transplants. Right.
Yes.
And they cannot get a transplant.
Yeah. And you can't know who made that complaint or even what the complaint was. Now, what kind of sick system is this that can go on?
No, you said it. It's a system that is very unfair to all sorts of people, poor people, African-Americans who suffer from kidney failure three times as much as Caucasians do, and the people who are geographically remote from transplant centers. All are strongly discriminated against.
Yes.
Right,
Arlene,
people
we've got
have
about
a chance
minute
to
here.
Live.
Yes.
Okay.
We got about a minute left here.
Ariel's GoFundMe page is on our Facebook, Dialysis Advocates. We're an advocacy for patient rights in dialysis. We charge. There's no charge. Feel free to help us. And to contact us if you need anything at all. Ariel,
yes.
Donations, I hope they keep coming in. And I,
thank
you're
you.
Going
I appreciate
to college
it.
Too, right? Well,
yes.
You have a life, and that's what you really need, is a chance at having a normal life.
Yeah, I'm
trying.
And, exactly.
And people like Waitlist Zero is a good organization, and I hope
is
people write letters and do it if they No, it's an organization. It's an actual Dr. McCormick, do you want to give what it is?
Well, it's in your words. It's Josh Morrison's organization, and he's just working very, very hard in Washington to change the law and to solve the problem. So he is the leading person in this effort, and he has lots of allies in Congress and elsewhere, but not enough to change the law yet.
Okay, we're out of time here. Yeah, we're out of time. I want to thank everybody. Ariel, thank you for calling in this evening.
Thank you.
Dr. McCormick, thank you for being our guest. Arlene, good show. We will be back next
week.
Well,
I'm learning.
You'll get through
it.
Don't
worry. Next week we have a cinematographer. That one.
All right.
We're going to have an interesting show next week also. And thank you, Marcel and Marty, for allowing us this opportunity.
All right. And we'll see y'all next week. Thank you, everyone. You too, Ariel.
Hi.
Good night.
Bye.